Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
The first thing I want to get to, it's going to be a big day on the 24th of May, because not only will you have the local elections, not only will you have the elections for the European MEPs, but you'll also have a referendum on divorce. So you have a lot to think about between now and then. But one man who's put his hat in the ring, so to speak, for the Midwest of the country is Peter Casey, former presidential election candidate. And he joins us here in the studio. Good afternoon to you, Peter.
Good afternoon, now.
Peter, firstly, why did you want to do this?
Well, for the same reason that I stood for the presidency. I believe that my mother kept saying, "You're here to make a difference, son." You know, that's.
But you did. You were successful in business. You made a difference.
You know, I've got a little bit to go yet now before I retire. So I've got a few things to do before we close down.
But is it, from a financial point of view, is it not a bit of a come down? I mean, here you are. Look, there's no doubt about it. You're a multimillionaire, okay? You've been very successful in business, you know, in a recruiting company that basically recruits some of the top end employees in the world. Mm-hmm. And you've everything you wanted. And now it's a kind of a come down to be earning, what, 120 grand a year? And, you know what I mean? I mean, is that not a bit of a come down?
I'm not doing it for the money now. No, I believe that I can make a difference. I'm very passionate about rural Ireland. As you know, I set up the company in Donegal 23 years ago. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of things that we need to talk about in rural Ireland. There's a lot of debates that we should have. And they're all being closed down by political correctness, quite frankly.
You know? So you're getting tired of hearing that?
Yeah. You know, it's the same old, every time you say something, you get accused of being either a racist or, you know, you're not being politically correct.
Well, during the election, the presidential election, of course, we were accused of being discriminating against travellers. And I won't go into this too much, and I'm sure you're tired of that conversation.
Yeah.
But it said on your Twitter account that the nomination papers have been handed in. My campaign trail for Europe has officially begun across the Midlands, Northwest. I want to empower communities and give a voice to locals in Europe. So how do you plan to represent the people of the Midwest and give them a voice?
Well, there are probably five issues, really, I think, that are really important in rural Ireland. One, of course, is infrastructure and jobs. You know, we really have to really work hard to make sure there is good infrastructure in parts of rural Ireland, such as like Galway and down in Tuam. And there's some places where there is good infrastructure, but there's a lot of places where there just is not possible to do business in because there isn't the broadband and the infrastructure there. And physically getting there. Healthcare is another major issue. Housing.
How do you change the healthcare system? You've got numerous problems in the healthcare system. You've got waiting lists as long as your arms. Poor old Helena was there with her mother last week and, you know, spent nearly 24 hours or whatever it was in A&E. Not that it was the doctors and nurses' fault, but it's the whole administration system. And then you've also got the cost factor involved for, you know, if I get sick, you know, can I afford to go to a doctor or do I just put up with it?
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, I had an ear infection when I was up in Donegal there at the weekend, and I went down and I couldn't even get an appointment. They said the nurse can see you the day after tomorrow, you know. I mean, it's...
Yeah, you've got a plan to be sick now.
You almost have a plan to be sick. You know,
I'm thinking of breaking my leg on Wednesday. Can I come and see you? Yeah.
No, but I then went up to Derry and just got straight in. You know, so if they can do it in Derry, why can't we do it in Buncrana and why can't we do it in Moville? You know, so they seem to have...
So how would you structure a change to the healthcare system? I mean, currently, I mentioned yesterday, we've got a three-tier system. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got those, I suppose, who have private healthcare.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they don't have to worry because they end up usually in public hospitals anyway, and not in private hospitals. You've got those in the middle who can't afford to go to a GP or can't afford to bring their kids to a GP unless they're under 6 years of age, under 12, mm-hmm. according to the minister, by 2022. And you've got those who are on medical card who don't have to pay anything.
Right.
So how do you fix that system to make it a fairer system? Because I talked about this briefly yesterday.
Yeah, you have to avoid the system being abused. So I think you have to have a flat charge, perhaps 10 or 15 euros per visit.
You were listening to my just show yesterday.
Well, you know, but if you don't have a flat charge and it's totally free, then, I mean, you'll...
You're going to have kids with snotty noses in waiting rooms.
Exactly. So you need to have a flat charge. But I think 15 euros, for example, would probably be about right, and that would stop people from going in, just as you say.
So are you saying, similar to what I suggested yesterday, we should abolish the medical card system?
Yes.
And everybody just pays a flat fee to go in to see a doctor or go to visit the hospital A&E, which at the moment is about 100 quid. So everybody just pays that flat fee, so that would avoid people not being able to afford to go to the doctor.
I think that's a discussion that needs to be had.
Do you think
had.
We can afford it? Because, I mean, in the UK, of course, they have free healthcare. You can go to a GP or a dentist for free.
Yeah.
I don't think we could afford free healthcare.
Well, if you look at the wastage that we've had in government, you know, the children's healthcare would pay for the whole, you know, there's 1.5 billion we just lost there. The broadband program, the Taoiseach turned around and said that it's going to be many multiples of, he doesn't know exactly how much extra it's going to cost, but it's going to be many multiples of the original estimate. I mean, it's ridiculous. They're talking, you say, so it could be 5 to 7 billion, you know, and we're going to be putting fiber optic cables in the ground that in 5 years' time we'll be wondering, why did we spend all that money? We should have gone straight to 5G.
Okay, you talked about the other issues as well. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned two already, which is obviously the rural infrastructure and obviously healthcare. I'm assuming housing is one of your issues because it's an issue that affects everybody. Or is that on your list?
Oh, no. Well, with housing, there's two approaches to it. The first one is, you know, we have people turning down houses just because they want to be closer to their mother, or because, you know, you shouldn't be allowed to turn down a house. If you're being offered a free house, then you shouldn't turn down a house.
Are you saying beggars can't be choosers?
No, I'm saying you should be appreciative. If you're being offered a free home, then I think you should say, thank you very much, I really appreciate it, and you should accept it. You know, now, that's the short.
Now, people are going to have a go at you and say, well, nobody gets a free home. But what I'm assuming you're suggesting is one that is subvented by the state.
Correct. Yes.
All right, okay. Many of those people would be on welfare payments, which have been given by the state. So essentially, I suppose it is free in some sense.
Yeah. Apparently, there's 3,800 houses at the moment unoccupied around Ireland. You know, so
that's an astonishing amount of houses, considering a lot of people on a waiting list.
But then there's a long term situation, and you know, in America there was a thing called the GI Bill, and when the returning servicemen were coming home after the war, the government gave them a interest free loan, 50%, as long as they invested in a new home. And it was the biggest stimulus in the history of the American economy. And it created a huge demand for building new homes. And if we can create that, a program similar to that, but it would have to be new homes in rural areas with infrastructure.
So the government essentially becomes the bank, is what you're saying.
Yeah, but they become a co-owner of the property as well.
It's a shared ownership.
It's a shared ownership scheme. And that would be, that would stimulate the local economies. There are other ideas. For example, we've got these houses that are derelict, that are falling down because they're grade one, grade two listed buildings. The government should turn around and say, okay, we're going to put a moratorium on the very strict conditions regarding restoring, and that would stimulate the local economy for local builders and tradesmen as well.
Do you think people are gaming the system? I mean, this has been an accusation by, you know, heads of Dublin City Council, for example, mm-hmm. and other organisations. Do you believe that people are gaming the system?
I think there are some people who definitely are taking advantage of it, and I think that people in that category, you know, yes, there are some people doing that. I don't think there's a large number of people doing it, but I think, yes, there are certainly people taking advantage of it.
Do you think Ireland is a soft touch when it comes to, you know, social welfare, housing, benefits? Are we a soft touch?
I think we have a responsibility as a society to look after people who can't look after themselves. But there are people who are taking advantage of it. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's a discussion.
Well, we have a responsibility to protect taxpayers' money, don't we?
We do. But we have to have a discussion on it without being labelled racist or the divisive. You know, you just have to. All I'm saying is the political correctness that exists in Ireland today needs to be shaken up. And we need to have a frank, open discussion on these issues.
Okay, I suppose one of the big issues that's going to come up will be direct provision. What is your opinion of direct provision?
If people are here, we have international obligations. We've entered into, and we have a responsibility to look at, to accept because we've entered into these treaties. We have to look after.
This is the Dublin Convention.
The Dublin Convention, and I believe that we have a responsibility to look after people, our quota of people that we've agreed to. That's what we've agreed to.
Okay, and who do we have an obligation to look after? Well, apart from those from Europe, there's a free movement of people. By the way, in relation to the free movement of people, this was a big issue that came up in Brexit.
Yeah.
And I get on to the non-EU in a few minutes, right? But a big issue there, this is the very reason Brexit happened, or is happening, or could happen, yep. right? We don't know yet. We won't know it in October, all right?
Yeah.
But this is the very reason it is because of the free movement of people, not just from outside Europe, but from within Europe as well, because there are a lot of unskilled people within Europe who are moving from country to country, claiming social welfare, claiming housing, whatever it happens to be, our benefits, right?
Yeah.
And the British didn't like it, or the British people didn't like it, and that's why they voted against it. It's clearly that was the objective, right? Because
yes.
David Cameron tried to sort that out before they went to a referendum, couldn't. Now the EU are come back and saying, actually, maybe we can do that, which could have avoided a whole referendum situation in the first place. But anyway, do you believe that we could stop the free movement of people? Or do you think people would want that?
Look, we're a member of the European community. We have a responsibility to take people from Europe, skilled or unskilled, and if they're members of the EU.
Is that a good thing?
That's what we've signed up for.
I didn't ask you that. I'm asking, is it a good thing?
We've signed up for it. And
can we handle it?
Well, Liechtenstein was able to opt out of the free movement of people because they felt that it was placing too big a burden.
Well, should Leo, which I know he's not because he's spineless, but should Leo go to Europe and say, you know, I'd like to talk about this? Or, you know, Irish people are a little bit concerned about the free movement of people.
We definitely need to have a discussion on it. And, you know, getting back to the direct provision, if people are here illegally... And
okay, now we're dealing with non-EU citizens.
Non-EU citizens. Yeah. If they're here illegally, you know, it's wrong. And there's 6,000 people in direct provision.
And the number is growing.
We, you know, obviously under the Dublin Convention, if they're genuine migrants, they should have been given asylum on their first port of entry. So the last time I checked, there wasn't any planes flying from Syria to Ireland or from Africa to Ireland, you know. So,
well, there are from some places in Africa, but not the places that we're seeing immigrants coming from.
Look, we have a responsibility on humanitarian grounds to look after people, and we've agreed to do that, and we should do it, but we should do it properly. You know, this idea of putting people in a holding centre, which is a prison without walls, essentially, it's just wrong. It's not Irish. It's not the way. It's like, Niall, you invite me over to your house for the weekend, you say, by the way, you're sleeping in the garage. It's just,
but that's provided I invite you over. If you arrive over at my house unwelcome, you know you're going to get the door. So essentially what you're saying is we need to fast-track the system.
We need to fast-track the system. Our borders are leaking. They're like a leaking bucket. You know, people can just come in through Stranraer, straight down to Dublin. There's no checks at port of entry. There should be a migration check to make sure that the person is legally entitled to come to Ireland. And at the moment, you know, how do you handle the problem?
Well, we do have immigration policy, as far as I know.
We're just not enforcing it.
And so, why do you believe we're not enforcing this? I mean, we do have an immigration policy whereby if you wanted to come to Ireland, you had to have a visa to work, okay?
Correct.
And or a student visa. Well, many students come here to study in Trinity every year, for example. I believe 80% of the student accommodation at the moment has been taken up by non-Irish citizens, which is fine. They're coming here to study. They're putting money into the economy. But in relation to, you know, adults coming here and claiming asylum, this is a kind of new experience for us. So, I mean, are you saying that most of them are not genuine?
I think we need to set up a panel of a judge with two or three other people on it, have 10 panels, and then just go through the 5,000 or 6,000 people.
But is that not what they're doing already?
Well, they're not enforcing it. You know, we're giving people deportation orders, but we're not deporting them. So, you know, what's the point of having giving someone...
Well, that's because there's a raft of legal people down there in the courts making a fortune on appeal after appeal after appeal after appeal, and people are here for 15 years, 10 years, appealing 10 and 20 times. So what do? You get one bite of the cherry. If you don't get it, you're sent home on a plane. Or do you have somebody in Dublin Airport basically making sure people are bona fide and checking their papers, checking where they're coming from, and making that decision there and then?
That's exactly what you do. And if their papers are not bona fide, then you put them back on a plane from whence they came. I mean, it's very simple.
Right, so asylum seekers come to Ireland, come into Dublin Airport, or come into a port, whatever port happens to be. We basically up the amount of staff that we have there to deal with the situation. We check as much as we possibly can to find out their bona fide. If we figure, like some of those Australian programmes we've seen on TV, that they're not, they're marched back out and the next plane back to where they came from.
They're given a ticket back to where they came. I mean, look, I welcome diversity. I encourage it. I think it's wonderful that we've got 200 different nationalities in Ireland at the moment. We can't afford to support the pensioners and the people that need our help because there's so many people that are here that don't deserve our help.
What do you say to the lefties and the independent? You just said you welcome diversity. And I accept that, okay? But what do you say to the lefties and the liberals out there and the, you know, some of the politicians that we're all very familiar with who will campaign to have as many people come into this country as possible who don't believe in borders for some strange reason, and they think you're a racist for even suggesting that.
Look, I'm totally in favour of diversity. We need skilled labour in Ireland. We need
unskilled.
We need unskilled labour as well. And the European Union provides us with as many skilled and unskilled people as we possibly need, actually probably more than we can handle, but that's what we've signed up for. So, but it's the people that are here illegally that are, we have become known as a soft touch. Come here, you'll be put up in an hotel or, you know, and they can't believe their luck. They're put in a hotel.
You get free education, free
education, free healthcare.
And money in your pocket.
Now, my point is, if they're genuine asylum seekers, we should fast track it. We should give them a passport. We should say, you're here, you're an Irish person. We'll give you an Irish welcome.
Get a job.
And get a job. And
but at point of entry, you believe we should ramp up at point of entry, check bona fide if they're not bona fide,
correct,
as they would do in Australia, many of the countries, back on the plane and sent home.
That's exactly what they do in Australia.
That would mean a lot of people being sent home, because if we look at the reports that have come out on one particular person who sat on the panel going through people's files there recently, I can't remember, his name eludes me for the moment, but he was on, I think, the Joe Duffy show many years ago. He said out of the 500 cases he examined, he believed that only two of them were actually telling the truth. That the rest, essentially, he believed were economic migrants.
I wouldn't take that as fact, but I think there is certainly a large, there's certainly a preponderance of people who would fall into that category. And I think we just need to, it's wrong to keep people penned up for years and where they can't. They're either genuine, they're entitled to Irish citizenship, in which case we give them a good, warm Irish welcome, give them a passport, or we give them a plane ticket back to the first port of entry.
In relation to what has happened recently, and we've seen a couple of fires in hotels that had been set aside for direct provision, because obviously locals in the area felt that maybe they'd been undermined as Irish people. You'll hear the cliche, Irish jobs for Irish people, look after our own first. What do you say to those people?
You know, there's a couple of issues.
By the way, let me be clear. Let's condemn anybody who sets anything on fire.
Absolutely, 100%. But that's an example, though, of Minister Flanagan. You know, he basically turned around and said, 100 people go here, 100 people go there. He didn't even have the courtesy to ring up the local county council to let the council, the chief executive of the county council concerned, know that this was happening, that this was coming down. He's the person that I would hold to blame for it, and it's disrespectful.
Well, obviously, you hold him to blame for the attitude of people, but obviously not for what happened. But you believe because of the irresponsibility of MEPs or of the irresponsible of MPs or TDs or local councillors who are not informing residents that this has been sprung on residents, but would it make a difference to their attitude? Because what they're doing is inherently wrong.
Well, when you're putting, for example, 100 people into a rural area, you need. First of all, as long as they're genuine migrants from wherever they deserve our support, I would give them a passport, by the way, as I've said, because I do welcome diversity. But they have to be genuine, and if they are, then we're putting them up. We should put the infrastructure in place to support them. For example, 100 people, you need at least another doctor, a dentist. You know, you have to provide for education.
So you can't just stick 100 people into a small village?
You can't, because it's just, without putting, you have to put the infrastructure in place to support it, or else, you know, if you're going to do something now, you have to do it or don't do it at all. Do it properly or not do it. So, I mean, I think we're just being disingenuous.
Okay, the other issues that, of course, you mentioned in the past was broadband. Broadband is killing parts of rural Ireland, or the lack of broadband. The broadband plan has been a complete and utter mess. It's turning into the voting machines plan that we had many years ago, and every other plan that we happen to come up with that goes, that we waste loads of money on, the children's hospital, all these other things. The broadband plan is a disaster. Why do you believe it's been a disaster?
Politically, you know, Leo's got himself and the government have got themselves tied into making commitments that they just cannot stand behind, which is why they announced it would be released before Easter, the winning bid eNet, and of course it's now been put off indefinitely. It just doesn't make sense to put dig cables and run them up halfway up a mountain to a farmer who doesn't want broadband in the first place. So there needs to be a discussion, and we need to have a discussion around. I mean, obviously, I think that if you look at around the world, 5G is certainly an option that we should have explored in much greater depth. And if you, for example, had strong 4G, on your cell phone, you could have four or five bars on your cell phone, you'd still be able to pick up 20 meg on your broadband. And that actually would be enough to let you, you know, operate your business. I mean, I started my business in Donegal 23 years ago, and we were the first company in Ireland to have VoIP with breakout, so my staff, the researchers in Donegal, could ring America free of charge.
So you're ringing using the internet, was
using the internet. That was 23 years ago we did that, you know, and that was with 56k, and they were actually charging me 28,000.
I remember 56k well. I remember that noise. Do you remember that famous noise? Oh, by the way, somebody sticks in and says, hi, now, that's not true that it's appeal after appeal after appeal. Well, by the way, I've had many asylum seekers on the air who've told me they've had two and three appeals. But anyway, a new legislation was introduced in 2017 to have a singular system appeal process. So the asylum seeker is interviewed. They either accept it or not. If they are accepted, they are given asylum status, or obviously permission to stay, or granted permission to stay. If not, they're entitled to appeal. Well, that's what you're saying. They are entitled to appeal. There is only a waiting time of less than 3 months at the moment for appeal. If the appeal is affirmed, then a deportation order is issued, but the asylum seekers go to ground, as they know they won't qualify. If it is set aside, then again they get the asylum seeker status. I'm curious about that, what you're saying here, because we've seen many high court cases where people who have had appeal after appeal have then taken it to the higher courts. But anyway, I work in the International Protection Appeals Tribunal. For obvious reasons, I can't go on the air or give my name, but it's not as bad as he's making it out to be. Thanks for that. Well, obviously, you work in there and you don't believe it's as bad as it's been made out to be. But look, even the point that you're making is they go to ground. And I think that's the point that Peter made, that there is a lot of deportation orders being issued. We had one man in the studio only recently from the Congo who had a deportation order for 8 years. He was still living with his partner, who was also from a non-EU citizen. They had two children. They got married to try and avoid being kicked out of the country. And they're here 8 years and they're claiming social welfare and living in a council house. So I don't know how that's actually even possible, but it clearly is, because they were doing it. So I think the figure there last year, the year before, was 85% of people with deportation orders on them are never actually put out of the country, which is quite. Do we have any idea how many people are illegally in Ireland?
That's the thing. Nobody really knows. You know, it's a bit like
the figure. I've heard figures of 20,000 and of 60,000. Mm-hmm. So I don't actually know the figure. I don't know if there is an actual defined figure of people. But as she said herself, what happens is if they fail their appeal, they run to ground.
The other issue that I feel very strongly about now is in guard. We've been closing down guard stations. We need more Garda in.
But Alan Chatter started this, right, going back a while ago. So he started closing down Garda stations left, right, and centre. But there's a recruitment drive on at the moment. We're running the ads here on the radio for it. They can't get people to join.
Well, they need to pay them more. You know, I mean, pay them more money. I mean, obviously, it's a demand supply. If you give the guards are underpaid for starters, so, you know, and the conditions and the hours are challenging. And, you know,
if you look across Europe at what we're paying them, I mean, it's pretty much on average.
Well, it's obviously not enough because we're not getting the people that we need to get. So it's just a demand supply, you know, and, you know, it's a tough job. I mean,
I have no doubt it is. I wouldn't do it.
Well, you know, I mean, tragically, I mean, I was at a very bad accident there a couple of years ago, and the guards have to show up, and this is what they do.
Oh, they have to deal with very difficult situations.
Very difficult chat, and I don't think we pay the guards enough. So, but up in Donegal, they've closed down the Garda stations, you know, in Bridgend and Mofty, operate them part-time. Mm-hmm. You know, people are afraid to go for funeral, you know, to leave their house empty if they're going to a wedding or a funeral, you know. So it's we need to have more guards. There's actually an interesting... recently, I was listening. There's this guards were superintendents were being charged or being. There was an incident where they were getting paid for doing some security work, you know, outside of ours.
That's right.
But that's exactly how the.
Well, I remember from my day. I mean, guards were working as nightclub bouncers.
Exactly,
because they weren't earning enough money.
You know, in America, that's exactly what the police do there. They make good income from
private security companies.
No. Like they, for example, at all the weddings, at churches, and Sundays, the police are there controlling the traffic. They get a stipend from the church. You know, for funerals, you'll get the guards. The police will go along and give you an escort, and that's all done. It's accepted that they get about a third of their income from
private functions.
And there's nothing wrong with that at all.
I'm by the way, I just want to mention as well, there are, you know, 7 registered independent candidates in total in your area. There's yourself, there's Luke McFlanagan, there's Fidelma Healy-Ames, there's James Miller, Dilip, I can always fail to pronounce her name properly, Mahapatra, I think it is, Diarmaid Mulcahy and Olive O'Connor. The Fianna Fáil also has 2 candidates in there, Anne Rabbit and Brendan Smith for Fine Gael. Mairead McGuinness will try to retain her seat, while the former Rose of Tralee, Maria Walsh, will also run on behalf of the party. Michael O'Dowd will fly the flag for Inua, and Sinn Féin's Matt Carthy will also be rerunning as well. Is that good competition for you, Fianna?
I think so. I think it'll be a good, healthy, robust...
Do you think you're in with a shot, like? Well, I mean, you did get 300 and something thousand votes in the presidential election. Not enough to win, obviously, but you got a lot of second preference votes.
You know, I mean, I think Matt has already announced that he wants to stand for the Dáil.
Okay.
And so, you know...
And is that the goal? Do you want Leo's job in the future?
No, the goal now is to make a difference in Europe. And, you know, so I think I'm in with the... Yes, I'm going to work very hard to try and get my message across to the people in rural Ireland. And I think, you know, particularly there's so many American companies that I'll resonate with in Galway, for example, you know, because we need to encourage the American companies to come and invest in the west coast of Ireland.
And pay taxes.
Exactly.
All right. By the way, I'm going to keep Peter here for a minute or 10 minutes after the break, all right? So if you want to ask him a question, if there's any question you want to ask him, particularly if you're from the Midwest, obviously, because as he will be representing you in Europe if he does get the gig, and he makes a lot of money out of it as well, because it's a good salary, isn't it, Peter? So what I want to know is, well, mind you, nothing to what he probably has already. What I want to know is, if you want to ask Peter any question at all, you're quite welcome to text us or WhatsApp us at 087-188-0008. That's 087-188-0008. You can come on the air and ask him yourself, or just text the question to me and I'll try and put it to him for you. All right, so it's 087-188-0008. In relation to the other candidates, by the way, we will offer, obviously, all those other candidates an opportunity to come on air at some point as well, before the 24th of May, the other candidates in his specific area. Donal, you're on Classic Hits. How you doing, Donal?
How you doing, Niall? You well?
Good, good. Have you been watching Little House on the Prairie again?
Niall, my heart is broken. Do you know what's that happening? Mary is working in a blind school. You know Mary?
She went blind. I do, yeah. She went blind, yeah.
She got married. She had a child. There's a fire and the child is...
Oh, God.
And I mean, how's the man supposed to keep going with this crack?
I know. You must be brokenhearted for Mary.
Not the man at all. I don't know.
And are the Ingalls all gathering and supporting her? And what about the Olsons? Are the Olsons...
T.G. Cahill want to be copping his own, throwing that stuff on during the middle of the day.
Right, but get it back to Peter Casey anyway. Yeah. The real world, yeah.
Well, there's 2 questions I want to ask Peter.
Good morning, Don.
I consider myself... Good morning, Peter. Where are you? I consider myself an Irish nationalist, Peter. Right? Yeah. Now, I voted... No, but I feel that most of the Liberals consider me homophobic, a white supremacist, you know? And just because I'm a nationalist, just because I want to put Ireland first, I don't think Europe is a democracy. I just don't. Yeah. I fail to see how Juncker and the rest of them, I never elected them anyway. I never even, you know.
Yeah.
I never elected them. So I fail to see how a democracy. So if you ask questions about Europe, if you ask questions about immigration, you're a racist. And it needs to stop. And the media are not doing their job. Apart from 4FM and some local radio stations, the main media are not doing their job. This, you know, that's what I feel. And the other question I want to ask you is, where would you stand on pay for the defence forces? Because
that's a big issue at the moment. Okay, a big issue at the moment, obviously, yeah. Peter, is we can't get people to join the defence forces because the money's crap.
Yeah.
And the wives of the defence forces, in fairness, the wives of the men in the defence forces have, you know, campaigned for the last few years to increase the money. It's awful.
It is. I mean, with the Navy... Yeah, we had an instance there a couple of months ago where they couldn't get the soldiers to staff the ship because they were out doing part-time work. I mean, either you have a Navy that's fit for purpose and you pay the people a decent, good living wage, or you just say, okay, we're not serious about having a Navy. But, you know, if you're going to have it...
Well, here's the thing. Do we need an army? Remembering, of course, Donald was in the army, and that's not insulting. Yeah.
We definitely need an army, and I think it's a great place for young people to go and get trained and disciplined I definitely think it's a great idea to have an army. The Air Force, I'm a little bit the Air Corps. We've got 27 fixed wing aircraft, and all
they're doing. We don't need the planes. We need choppers.
Yeah, we need choppers. Exactly. That's what I've said, Donald. We need air rescue. We should get rid of the 27 planes that are training pilots for Ryanair, and get 12 air ambulances.
Realistically, we're not going to go to war, are we? We're using planes.
Well, Niall, a very interesting point on the planes. Now, the Minister of Defence wouldn't admit it on television, but the RAF provide
that's correct.
Planes for RAF space.
That's
a fact.
So, in other words, it's a complete and utter waste of money.
Yeah.
It's a complete and utter waste of money.
Yeah, after 9/11, yeah. Donald, you're quite right. After 9/11, yeah. We subcontracted out our defence of the airspace to the RAF, you know.
Yes.
All right, okay. Well, getting back to Donald's other question,
the question was on the nationalism.
The nationalism.
Yeah.
He says he can't even open his mouth or he's referred to as a racist or a homophobe.
I'm obviously a very proud Irishman, and I've lived all around the world, and everywhere I go, I meet other people who are very proud to be Irish. So, I think our nationalism has been slowly eroded by the EU and by all this multitude of rules and regulations that they're imposing upon us. And as an aside, for example, Don, I really think we should never have left the punt. If we'd kept the punt, we would have been able to actually control our own, have more influence over our own.
We'd have less national debt.
We'd have less national debt. Like, for example, if we'd spent like drunken sailors, pardon the pun of the name of there, but, at the time, the value of the punt would have gone down 20-25%. The Mercedes and the Beamers would have been 25% more. Yeah. We'd have bought less of them, and then it would have been 25% cheaper for people to come to Ireland for a nice holiday. And that would have then rectified the demand supply for the punt, you know?
Point I want to make on Brexit, and I was just over Sunderland the weekend, okay? First of all, it was £2.30 a pint, which was great. And the second point I want to make is, I spoke to a lot of people over Sunderland, and they're sick to the teeth in Irish politicians telling them what to do, and telling them that they've created a problem just because they took a demographic vote.
Yeah.
They're really sick to the teeth of Irish politics, and especially Sinn Féin. They're really sick to the teeth of Sinn Féin telling them what to do when you consider what their animals done in Guildford and Birmingham and every place else.
Oh, exactly. And the thing that the craw in their in the throat is the fact that they're actually paying the Sinn Féiners for not turning up, you know?
Yeah. Well, I know the vote Sinn Féin is just beyond me.
Listen, I have loads of other people who have other questions as well. Thank you for that. But one of the questions is, should the army, in relation to the army, Peter, be used to tackle rural crime? We've also heard recently that Tesco's, of course, are afraid to deliver into certain areas of Dublin as well. Mm-hmm. And that's becoming a huge problem. Taxi drivers won't go into certain areas of Dublin. You've got the bus services won't go into certain areas of Dublin after certain times. Now when young individuals are getting, basically told they can't go out after 9 o'clock at night, there's a curfew. Do you agree with curfews, by the way?
That's a very good idea there.
And you've got an area where you've had a lot of crime.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's sort of the point that we should have a discussion on. Should we use the army to part-time to help
tackle
crime? I don't see why not. I think it would be, it's not what they're going to be doing full-time, but definitely if there was soldiers patrolling around, it would definitely have an impact on crime, and I don't see why not.
Stephen, you're on Classic Hits. Hey, Stephen.
Hi, Niall, and good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Stephen.
And it's good to hear you on the radio taking calls from real people. I have a quick question for you. There's an article in the Business Post a couple of weeks ago about the Sinn Féin MEPs refusing to disclose their unvouched expenses, which I believe is just over €4,500 a month.
Oh, it's a great gig.
Absolutely. Which is kind of ironic when one of them was actually demanding Michael D disclose his. So my question to you, Peter, is that if elected as an MEP, and I do hope that you are, will you fully disclose all the unvouched expenses?
100%. 100%. It'll be on my website. You'll be able to log on and see exactly how many expensive dinners I'm going for.
And how much can you spend? Is there what's the allowance? Or what, as an MEP, you obviously get a salary.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the salary? 120 grand a year?
It's about 118, I think it is. But then you get so much per day when you turn up. So just for turning up, you get a few quid. You get, I think it's 480 or something. But the big
per
one,
day? Yeah. For turning up. Right, okay. So that's unvouched.
That's unvouched. And then the big one, of course, is you get a monthly allowance for staff, and then if you go on...
Like a communications officer, PR, whatever it is.
Correct. PA. And then if you go on a committee, you get...
Jeez, that's a good gig, isn't it?
You get more if you're on a committee, you say.
Do you want to run, Stephen? I'll back you.
Well, I wouldn't mind being Peter's alternative if he hasn't picked one yet.
Okay, but I think Peter's asked the question. He has no problem whatsoever, obviously showing where his expenses are spent and how they're spent, or a breakdown of that, if that's what you want.
Well, that's excellent. I know he did release it for the presidential campaign as well. I think all of them do. I think it's hypocritical for some, particularly Sinn Féin, not to disclose it. So I appreciate Peter's straight answer on it, and I wish him the best of luck.
Thanks,
all right.
Stephen.
All right, thanks, Stephen. Somebody else is as well, text here on WhatsApp. Hi, Niall, can you ask Peter about truck drivers, the backbone of the country, who got nothing off Europe or our country since 2017?
Do you know, it's interesting. I was talking to the trucker, the haulage, Road Haulage Association recently, and they were explaining to me that trucks coming from Donegal, for example, have to pay a fee going through the north.
Tariff, yeah.
The tariff, you know, and that's just wrong.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I didn't until I started, you know, my examination of it. And I mean, it's a.
Well, the cost of diesel has affected their business greatly as well.
And
which is, by the way, carbon tax, VAT, excise duty, all these things. That's all cost them a huge amount of money.
Absolutely, and if they don't, they have to pay this tax going through using the A5. Which, by the way, the A5 is still under construction, so it's not saving them much time. But the alternative is to drive down through Sligo and across. You know, that
okay, so
up.
what can be done to alleviate?
The government should just pay, they should pay that. If they should negotiate with the British government and say we want that.
Okay,
you know,
all right. Okay, so abolish that. Okay, Robbie, you're on Classic Kids. Just very quickly, Robbie, because I'm running out of time. But go ahead, Robbie.
Hi, Dylan. Just a quick one there on carbon tax. I'd just like to know what Peter's stance on climate change, if he became an MEP, and what his attitude to a European army would be.
I'm totally opposed to a European army. You know, I think that that would just really be a. I think you'll find that France has got 400,000 soldiers. Germany has got, I think it's 75,000. You know, Ireland has got, or what, 11,500.
So I think it's not even that. I think it's only 7,000.
No, it must be including the army and the navy. But you know, I'm totally opposed to that. With regards to carbon tax. You know, I think that it's just another tax that the government is using to levy money. I don't think they're really serious about the environment with it. So,
what about you? Would you be serious about the environment?
I absolutely. I think, you know the sad story there about the whale that was washed up with 95 pounds of plastics in its stomach the other day?
Yeah.
I mean, we are able to influence the world by just making gestures. For example, putting tax on plastic bags originally, you know, and I think
single-use plastics, which was
and single-use plastics, we should announce that we're going to abolish or have a plan to have them abolished within 5 or 10 years, whichever is realistic.
Biodegradable instead of plastic.
And biodegradable, exactly. You know, I mean, we've got Coca-Cola here. We could use our influence to get Coca-Cola to either go back to glass or to go to biodegradable.
So my point is, you wouldn't have a problem tackling the big corporations in relation to climate change.
Absolutely not. No, I deal with the big corporations currently.
That's why I asked.
No, absolutely none whatsoever.
And what about the other big corporations? Sorry, I've gone completely off the subject, Robbie, but social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they've come under a lot of fire lately, getting away with absolutely murder.
They deserve to come under a lot of fire. You know, they should be held accountable. And this social bullying, you know, that goes on, social media bullying, it's just so wrong. And it would be very easy to abolish it. What you've got to do is get all the social media companies in a room, say, here's, boys, you've got to come up with a solution to this bullying, and if you don't, we'll charge you, we'll fine you, you know, 10 million a month, and then after 3 months we'll double it to 20 and then double it to 50, and they'll soon come up with a solution to it. They really will.
Peter, just very quickly, the divorce referendum. They want to reduce it from 4 to the previous 5 years. What they're going to have to do, because it's constitutional, they'll have to repeal it completely and then bring in legislation for the 2 years. Personally, I believe there should be no waiting period. That's just my own personal view. What do you think?
I think 2 years is, you know, especially if there's children involved, it gives people time to work through the problems and the challenges.
Sure, it takes a year anyway to get through all the legal ramifications either way.
I think 5 years is too long, so I would be voting for the 2 years.
Okay, so you would vote yes to that, to change it.
I think very sad, but it is what it is.
I think divorce is a fact of life sometimes for some people. Mm-hmm. Michael, you're on Classic Kids. How are you doing, Michael?
Hello, Niall. How are you?
Good. You want to ask Peter a question, yeah? Go ahead.
Yes, please. Good afternoon, Peter. How are you?
Good afternoon, Michael.
Peter, what is your viewpoint on people with disabilities, and also what would you do if you were elected to the EU Parliament regarding real work opportunities for people with disabilities, and also providing education, real education, in universities, colleges, etc.? What would your viewpoint on
that? So providing opportunities for people with disabilities in Ireland,
Work and education,
Michael, you know, I think it's acknowledged that we fail miserably. You know, we're one of the worst in Europe at providing opportunities, you know, for people with disabilities. And so I think, you know, what can you do as an MEP? You can actually, you've got a platform to sort of expand and explain what we need to do and bring attention to it and shame, name and shame the TDs here in Ireland who can actually can and should be doing something about it, you know. I think that's one thing you can do. The system is, as you know, widely abused, and some disabilities are, you know, not being able to read or write. Technically, I don't. It's classed as a disability.
Many do, Peter. Like many people with disabilities have skills and are educated.
Absolutely. I think the point that Peter's making is that there are many people in this country genuinely disabled, but there are obviously people who are abusing the system, and if that abuse wasn't there, well, I think what he believes is there would be more money to support people with genuine disabilities.
Yeah. Well, I have a disability myself, but I'm looking for work, but I find it very hard to find employment myself, you know?
Yeah. I mean, in America, what they do, Michael, is they give incentives to employers, you know.
So it's incredible over there,
actually.
I noticed it when I was over there in Walmart. You know, you've got a guy going around the car park collecting the trolleys in an electric wheelchair. That's not something you would see over here. So they have those opportunities. It's almost like they encourage people with disabilities to get out there and be part of society.
Well, they paid half this. I had an assistant working for me, a young guy, and he was in a wheelchair. And Georgia picked up half a fair chunk of his wages.
Mm.
Yeah, well, I have a bit of good news. I know a few people now with disabilities who have jobs, even within HSE and other employments as well.
And that's great, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
All right, well, listen, thanks very much for that, Michael. All right, I hope that answered your question. Somebody else wants to know, why did you apologise for your stance in relation to travellers during the presidential election? Did you apologise, Peter? Because I didn't hear the apology.
I certainly did not. No.
So you still feel the same way in relation to travellers being an ethnic minority?
They're not an ethnic minority. I think it's wrong to discriminate against any race, whether it's a person's race or religion or sexual preference. It's wrong. Discrimination is totally wrong. But I don't believe that A, they're an ethnic race, a different ethnic race, and B, they should be
given... So you still stand by that?
I'd even go further. I think it should be repealed. You know, they shouldn't be given the
so they should take... You should take that status away from them.
Absolutely,
again.
Yeah.
Okay, a lot of people might not agree with that. Also, in relation to you mentioned sexual orientation as well there a few minutes ago, and gender, I suppose, comes into that. One of the big questions at the moment is transgender rights. Mm-hmm. Do you have an opinion on the rights of transgenders? Now, Ireland, of course, is the first country to allow transgender people to self-identify. Do you believe that's a good thing? Is it okay for children to identify as different genders?
You know, I absolutely would be supportive of transgender people having absolutely equal rights to straight people. But I think children need to be protected. So I would put an age limit of 18 before people can make a decision on whether to... It's obviously a major life-changing decision. If you feel you're in the wrong, you know, it's so challenging.
The wrong gender.
It's such a tough position to be in.
All right. Well, look, Peter, I wish you well. You grew up for some stiff competition there, but you never know. You could be successful. Peter Casey, good luck to you. And don't forget, by the way, there are many other candidates who you can vote for there as well. I mentioned them already. You've got Luke McFlanagan, Fidel Mahaley, Ames, James Miller, Gila Pamapatra, Dermot Mulcahy, Olive O'Connor, Anne Rabbit, Brendan Smith, Mairead McGuinness, and the Rosa Tree, Maria Walsh will also be running. Michael O'Dowd on behalf of Renew and Sinn Féin's Matt McCarthy also running in the same region. So you can give them all a vote if you want to. Peter is looking for your vote anyway. All right, Peter, best of luck, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you again soon.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.